Hey everyone, and welcome back to the Adopting and Fostering Home Podcast. Wherever you are on your fostering or adopting journey, we're here to provide the resources and tools you need. And I think today's guest will be a great source of encouragement to you. Today we welcome Terry Marcroft. Now, Terry is an adoptive mom who had the privilege of walking through open adoption many years ago, when it was still not a common practice. So I think you'll enjoy the story today as Terry encourages us on what open adoption can look like and the relationship we can enter with birth moms and what healing that brings to both sides. Well, Terry, thanks so much for your time today and for being with us. And I've loved getting to talk with you. I've loved getting to know you. It's just been a joy for me. And tell me about, let's just back up a bunch of years here and talk about how you began this journey of adoption.
Okay, sure. I'm happy to talk about our adoption journey as the Lord has walked with me every single step of the way through that. Mm-hmm. But my husband and I were facing infertility. This is way back in the 90s. And, we tried several different medical assistance or helpful aids. And we turned to adoption. And then from there, we had a long journey. It was a total about 3 years before we got connected with our birth mother. And when we did, from that point on, it was clearly a blessed process because everything went so smoothly after we got connected with our birth mother. She chose us and she was confident in her choice. And she was only 16 at the time. She was a senior in high school. And from the very first conversation that we had with her, I could see that she was just never wavering. She was strong and courageous and full of love for her unborn child, from the beginning. And so she allowed us to be in the last 4 months of her pregnancy with her, taking her to doctor's appointments and lunches and shopping.
Oh,
and
that's great.
Things like that. So we got to know her really well over those last 4 months. And when she went into labor, her mother called us so that we could be there at the hospital when she delivered. And so we got to be there for the last 2 hours or so of the labor. And then when Sydney was born, I mean, a moment that I will never forget. It was just beautiful that my husband and I were right next to her, holding her hand, and being able to greet Sydney when she was born. It was a beautiful thing. And although, I mean, obviously, it was extremely emotional for everybody, and it was really tough on the birth mother when we actually, left the hospital with the baby, and she left the hospital with her arms empty. And so there was a lot of just a lot of emotions surrounding the adoption before, during, and after, really.
Mm-hmm. Did she have a lot of support? Did her family support her? Or?
Her mother was her main support. So her mother was the one who confirmed the idea of placing for adoption and, kept reminding her daughter, which was Sydney's birth mother, that she could resume her life and continue with her plans. She was an ambitious girl, and she had college plans. She had career plans. She had high aspirations for herself. And so she wanted to, to achieve a lot in her life. And so she did not allow herself to get, derailed from the pregnancy, but instead she made it into a really beautiful thing for Sydney and for my husband and me. And so she really turned an unplanned situation into a beautiful one.
How did that turn that way? Because I know you guys kept a relationship with her. Is that right?
Yes, we did. Yes. So openness, when you talk about open adoption, openness is a continuum.
Yeah.
And so it could be rather limited, which ours was in the beginning, with my promise to send photos at least every other month. This is before we all had a digital camera in our phone. And so I promised to send photos every other month because that's what she wanted. And I would have done anything for her,
for our
daughter's birth mother. Whatever she asked, I said, yes, of course, of course, of course. Uh-huh. And so so photos at the beginning. And then that went on for about 5 years.
Oh, wow.
She, She went on to college. She went to a UC in California, a University of California, which is quite rigorous. And so she spent the next 4 years just head down in studies.
Yeah.
And when she got out of college, then Sydney was four. And then she went on to graduate school. And then 9/11 happened. Mm. And then we invaded Iraq. And then she went and sent me a Christmas card when Sydney was in kindergarten. She sent a Christmas card and said, "Hey, Terry, I am leaving grad school. I'm going to go to officer's training. I'm going to join the military. And when I get out of officer training school, I'm going to request to be stationed in Iraq. And in case I don't come back," she says in her note, "in case I don't come back, I want to come and spend a weekend with you in Sydney."
Oh, my goodness.
And so, of course, yes. And so that was when she spent that weekend with us in when Sydney was in kindergarten. That was the first time we'd seen her in 5 years. Mm. And so, of course, we welcomed her and spent that time with her. And then she went off to officers training school. And from that point on, our adoption was a little bit more open in terms of letters that she sent to us and the number, the frequency with which we communicated. And so then from then on, she was in the military and she was on an officer officer path, a career path. And so she was traveling all over. They didn't send her to Iraq. They sent her to Asia. But she stayed in the military and we kept in touch. And then I think it was, you know, 7 or 8 years later, she got married. And a few years after that, she got promoted in the military. And she asked us when Sydney was 16, she asked us to come over and attend her promotion ceremony because she had been restationed then to the U.S. And so we did. And so then we all reunited again.
Oh, man. Yeah.
And it was just beautiful in the open adoption continuum, because now we've got, you know, Sydney in the same room with her birth mother when my daughter is 16 years old. And you could just see Lynette, the dots in her brain getting connected, like all of the dots are lining up. And she said to her, she said to me, "So my birth mother was 16 when she placed me and I'm 16 right now." Wow. Wow, I can imagine not being ready to raise a kid. Like, I just want to, you know, be on Snapchat and Facebook and stuff.
Right, right.
And so play with my friends and go to the mall.
Yeah, and so the pieces of her story at 16, you say she's connecting the dots. Her story's coming together.
Yes, in her mind.
Yeah.
She understood not only the facts, but also the motivations and the mindset that her birth mother was in when she got pregnant.
Man, what I wish that every child that's placed for adoption could have that story.
Yes, yes, because it takes away all the questioning and it takes away all of the worry about, was it because she didn't want me or is it because I wasn't good enough or was it because of something I said or did? You know, is it because of me? And it was like, no, it was just because of her situation. And in spite of that, she loved you so much that she made this plan for you.
Yeah.
So it was just, it was beautiful to see all of that come together in Sydney's mind.
Well, I like when we were talking earlier, when you and I were talking one day, you just said when Sydney turned 18, you kind of stepped out of the picture.
I did.
And I love that statement. And I want you to just kind of talk to us about that a minute.
So through junior high and high school, I was taking her to visit her birth mother every other year at least. And we'd go for a visit. And then when Sydney graduated high school and the two of them, they had each other's cell phone numbers in their phone. You know, they had their contacts. Mm-hmm. They had a relationship. And at that point, I just said, okay, you two take it from here. Mm-hmm. You know, I've paved this road for you because I thought it was important that you were connected. But from now on, you make it whatever you want it to be.
Yeah.
It's completely up to you. So you two work it out. And and then I stopped all of my arranging and planning, which I'm very into, you know, okay, I'll get out of the way.
Yeah.
And you girls make it happen. And so that's what they're doing now. They're seeing each other when it suits them both or communicating when it suits them both or reaching out when it suits them.
Do they still meet in person occasionally?
They did. They just met a couple months ago. She went to visit Sydney in her town And so they did get together. And now the birth mother has a daughter as well.
Oh, wow.
And that girl is, let me see, I'd have to do the math, 7 or 8 years younger, maybe 10 years younger than Sydney.
Uh-huh. Oh, wow. Yeah. The Lord just built this big family. That is just amazing.
Yeah, exactly. Because that's the whole thing. You have a couple of families now. You have clans that are joining, mm-hmm. and more people to love you. And we all know our hearts are not finite. Mm-hmm. We can expand to, you know, give and receive a huge amount of love. So there's nothing wrong with more people to love you in the world.
Yeah.
We all need that.
Yeah. And would you say, Terry, that pursuing that relationship with Sydney's birth mom, a lot of that landed on your shoulders? Like you had to do a lot of the work?
I would say it was more of a joint effort between her birth mom and me. And what my part of that responsibility, I think, or I saw it as just being sensitive to what she was ready and needing.
Oh, that's a good point. Well, yeah.
Yeah. So she wasn't always ready for constant communication, but she would let me know when she was. So I was trying to be a good listener and trying to be sensitive to her needs.
And so when you bring in Sydney's in kindergarten and she comes over for a visit, I think you said she was 4 or 5 when you saw her again. How do you mm-hmm. introduce her to Sydney? Like, what does help us understand how to do that?
When a child is 5 years old, I wouldn't want to lay a whole big story on them. And the funny thing about kids is that they'll ask you exactly the right question for what they can handle hearing. And so Sydney's question at that time was, how do you know her?
Mm.
And I said, she's been an old friend for about 6 years.
Yeah.
And so she's an old buddy. She's a very, very close friend of mine. And I would do anything for her. I love her so much.
Yeah.
And so it was more important to put forth how much I loved this woman when I was talking to Sydney about her, rather than the details of how she came into our life.
Uh-huh.
And so then it was later when Sydney was about 10 or 11, when she started connecting all of those dots in her mind. And she said, oh, that's why you love her so much. She gave birth to me and chose you. And it's like, yes, that's that. But never a lie.
Right.
Never a lie. Never a secret. Never covering up anything, really. The idea behind open adoption is that there are no secrets. And so making sure that everything is transparent, the reason I have concluded that that is so important is because if I'm always honest with Sydney, it helps in our mother-daughter relationship, because then she always knows that she'll get the truth from me.
Mm-hmm.
And it's never twisted or clouded or you know, there's nothing but honesty in there. And that helps us to have a close mother-daughter relationship, because she knows she'll always get the truth from me.
Mm-hmm. That's
so
right.
That's kind of the core of open adoption, is the transparency and the lack of secrecy and just the truth that pervades in all of the conversation and all the relationships. And so big fan of open adoption. And then realizing that that's not that easy to do, you know, I did start looking at my friends who had been trying to adopt when they were in their 40s or so, and it became so difficult because so few women were choosing adoption. And then starting to look at, you know, why that was, I did a bunch of research on it and found out that basically just everyday people, you know, you and me and all the people that we interact with in society, we're not talking about adoption or recommending it or suggesting it or encouraging it when we come across a woman who's facing an unplanned pregnancy.
Yeah, because you and I have talked one day that no one should do this alone. And so many, you know, if you try to do this alone, it's just so hard and you just need support.
It is. So our birth mother had her mom who, you know, was held her hand. She was there when she came home from the hospital. You know, she was there to walk her through the hard parts. And there are a lot of hard parts when you come home from the hospital and you've been, you know, focused on this baby for the last 9 months, and you go through the pain of delivery and the trauma of leaving that baby at the hospital. You know, there's a wound there that needs to be acknowledged.
Yeah.
and that needs to be healed. And so that's what also struck my heart for these birth mothers who place. I mean, it's the most difficult decision that they will ever make in their entire life, to place the baby for adoption and to find a loving home that's, you know, ready, willing, and able to parent, as the birth mother just simply can't at that point in time. And so caring for those birth mothers is certainly a gap in our society, I think, that there's the resources that they need and the care that they need, the TLC, the support, you know, the encouragement, the prayer, all of that stuff is just not quite as readily available as I'd like to see it.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
Yeah. So they need some extra resources, I would say. And so, yeah, that did lead to the survey that we talked about.
Yeah.
In 2019, we did conduct a survey of birth mothers and found out a little bit about what kinds of support was available to them. And then it was the most interesting part of it was probably separating it into like long ago adoptions that were happening in the days when all of the adoptions were closed, to since 2000, the adoptions are much more open. And certainly since 2010, open adoption is the norm. It's the current, you know, way that we do things, for good reason, because of all that, you know, need for honesty. And so there's a lot more support that's available now, but I think it's still got a way to go, Lynette.
Yeah, I agree. I totally agree. And I know, you know, if it could start within the local church as well, you know, to get several people to wrap care around, leaving judgment way behind, you know, and just being able to, like you said, I have friends who were adopted, friends in ministry who were adopted and didn't know till they were adults. You know, that it deepened their souls. We even did one with a pastor friend a while back, Michael Catt, and deep in his soul, he knew that something was just not quite right, you know, and did not find out about his birth mom until, you know, he was a grown man and had daughters of his own. And then it was too late to meet her, you know. But yeah. And so if we can get ahead of this and help usher gals into some loving relationships that truly we mean it and we want to do life with them, as you have suggested, that's a game changer. Well, I want to back up a little bit, because I know in 2007, the Lord really began churning something in your mind and it kind of birthed into Unplanned Good. Kind of tell us about that.
Unplanned Good. So that was, I had this feeling for the whole first decade of being Sydney's mom. I had this feeling that I needed to shout this story from the rooftops.
I love the way you started kind of when this was churning in your mind. You just went to your community and brought teachers and youth pastors and all that in your home and said, look, how do we fix this? Like, you were trying to figure out, how do we intercept this before it goes to abortion, right?
Right. Yes. Trying to, and also to confirm, because I found it hard to believe that adoption wasn't on the radar. So I needed to have those focus groups in my living room to say, really, is nobody talking about adoption when it comes up in the high school or when it comes up in the youth group? And it turns out that somebody's pregnant. What is your response? You're one of the youth leaders here.
Yeah.
You're one of the adult teachers here. What's your response? What do you say to these girls? And it confirmed, nobody's got adoption on their mind.
Yeah.
So of course the adults can't suggest it to the young women. So yeah, it became quite the mission that I needed to spread the word, and I wanted, and I prayed about this a lot and just said, what is it that you want from me here, God? You know, like, what, give me some direction here.
Yeah. Well, I encourage everyone to look up Unplanned Good. And I know that you even took it a step further and you put all that marketing background to good use. And you were asked to speak at the Heartbeat Conference in Dallas a couple of years ago. And that kind of led you to do a lot of in-depth research that fascinates me. And you really got to hear what birth moms were thinking.
Yes.
And so tell us how you went about that.
So I conducted a survey both before and added to it a bit at the Heartbeat Conference. So I have a survey now that has that polled 120 birth mothers. And the 120 birth mothers were from all different points in time. So a good chunk of them were from, had placed about 30 years ago.
Oh, wow.
And
yeah.
Then a good chunk of them had placed, you know, since 2000. And so the information that I was gathering from them was about post-placement support, basically. And the question was, you know, after, when was your baby born? It was about, what kind of support did you receive post-placement? And what kind of support would you have liked to have? You know, and what was your experience? And so to just listen a little bit to their hearts and whether their adoption was open or closed. And so when I break down the results, you know, the over 30 years ago placement, which was about a quarter of the 120, over 30 years ago, almost all the adoptions were closed.
Yeah, I would expect that, yeah.
Right, and so that means they were, the women were often forced into the adoption by their parents, and they didn't have very much control over it, and as a result, they didn't get to choose the adoptive parents. They didn't even get to talk about the adoption.
Right.
They didn't get to grieve it. They didn't get to, you know, talk it out. They didn't get to take time to heal, and they didn't get any closure because the whole society said, okay, we're never going to talk about this again.
Oh, wow. Yeah. And it was so common.
So common. And so they didn't have a chance to heal.
Yeah.
And they were just left on their own to figure it out and quote unquote, get over it. And it's not nice. It's not a healthy thing to do when you're acknowledging a trauma of loss.
Mm-mm, it's not treating someone with love. No, it's not.
Right. And so, you know, I think most of our community is happy to know that the whole paradigm has shifted towards open adoption now, and that almost all of the adoptions that happen these days are open to some extent, and they're often chosen by the woman as the best solution for her at that point in time and for her baby at that point in time. So whereas when the question came up, was the adoption your decision? Back 30 years ago, the majority, like three quarters of them, said no. But in the last decade, three quarters of them say yes. So that's evidence of the shift from closed adoption to open adoption. And then the other question was, when you say, was adoption opened or closed, where most of them were closed back then, there was also this huge, you know, section of the people who commented in the comment section, it used to be closed, but now it's more open because my child found me.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
And so, you know, that took a long time for that to happen, that the child would actually, you know, find the birth mom, the original mom, and be able to make that connection again. But the other part that was important was the post-placement support that the birth mothers asked for. And so I listed a whole bunch of different kinds in a multiple choice question. And the thing that didn't change was that the kind of support that women would like to have. And top of the list is one-on-one therapy. And then second to that is connecting with other birth mothers. So from 30 years ago to 5 years ago, all of those percentages remain constant, that all of these various types of support are important and would be helpful. But when you look at what people actually got, you know, it was 30 years ago, it was 78% of the birth mothers said they were offered no support and they received no support.
Mm.
And at least that's gone down. That's been cut in half in more recent years. So we still have quite a long way to go in offering these birth mothers support post-placement, but we're making progress.
Man, we really are. And just in 25, 30 years, nothing's changed about the heart of a woman as far as what we need, you know, the way God made us.
Mm-hmm.
We need help. We need wise counsel, therapy to get through mm-hmm. tough times. And we need community. And
yes.
That's still the cry of our heart, you know, for every mom.
And the other thing that's really interesting to note for fans of open adoption will understand this, that when you have an open adoption and the birth mother can stay in touch with that baby and observe their, you know, their formative years, their growing up, that actually helps in the healing process itself.
Right. Very healing. Yes. I'm such a fan of this, just walking through adoption myself, because I've been in this circle for over 20 years.
You
like
know.
You. Yeah. That what it does for a child's mental health, for a birth mom's mental health. And like you said, you know, you're holding grief and you're holding sorrow, but you know, you're making a wise decision. And, you know, how do you juggle all that? We really can't do that alone.
Right. We can't do that alone. We need to have others walking along with us. We need to have the prayer of our whole community. And we need to have the examples of others who've walked that path before us. And so that's why on the Unplanned Good website, the most important part of our website is the testimonials from others. And so we have a whole set of personal stories, and we've divided them into three groups. So there's adoptive parent stories, but more importantly, there are birth mother stories that show, you know, what the journey looks like. So if you're 16 and you just found out that you're pregnant, if you go on the Unplanned Good site and read the birth mother stories, you can imagine a little bit about what the journey might look like from here. Because at first it might seem quite overwhelming, but if you see that the birth mothers who've walked this, when they have the chance to reflect back on it, they view it as, yes, the hardest decision they ever made in their lives, but they also view it as the right decision for everybody. So for young women to be able to read those birth mother stories is super powerful. And then also the other, the number one question that the birth mothers have when they're contemplating that adoption decision, they're wondering if their child is going to hate them later on for what they did, for what they chose. And to read the adoptee stories that say, I'm grateful to my birth mother for choosing life.
Wow.
That's like the number one sentiment. I'm grateful to my birth mother for choosing life.
That's remarkable.
And it's important for them to know, don't you think?
Oh, yeah. Because I know with mine, you know, in our home, we don't have that information. So I just go to, and I believe this with all of my heart, you know, your mom carried you. It was against the law, but she carried you to term and she protected your life as long as she could. And you always want to give that, you know, you want to give that worth because it is hard. But I you know, and then to be able to bring that full circle, what a gift that would be. What a gift that would be to both sides. Well, thank you so much for sharing today. Man, I've really enjoyed our time together and just learning.
So have I.
Yeah, just learning what birth moms are thinking and how we can support them better and how we can shed light on adoption and how we can just see the body of Christ begin to open up to this.
Yes. Thank you so much, Lynette.
Thank you, Terry.
I've enjoyed talking with you too.
I really appreciate you joining me today on the Adopting and Fostering Home podcast, which is a ministry of Sin Relief. If you enjoyed today's episode, share it with a friend, and you can find more information and subscribe at sinrelief.org. Thanks for listening and making us a part of your adoption and foster care journey.